Now we both kinda like it. Now we both kinda know that if we're ever gonna make it, we just need to let go.
You're listening to the Crosscutting Concerns podcast. I'm your host, Matt Groves. Please visit the site at crosscuttingconcerns.com, where you can subscribe, browse the archives, contact me, read show notes, and leave a comment. I'm recording this podcast on September 7th, 2017. My guest today is the author of Programming JavaScript Applications with O'Reilly and co-founder of Dev Anywhere, Eric Elliott. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being on the show. I want to talk about unit tests today and test-driven developments. How has test-driven development helped you?
Well, first of all, it's made a tremendous impact on the teams that I've been on. It has reduced our production bug density dramatically and reduced our costs to ship our products. In fact, there's been lots of studies and a meta-study that shows that unit tests and TDD specifically help reduce production bug density by about 40 to 80%. Since a bug in production costs 15 times more to fix than a bug at coding time, it really, really saves a lot of time and a lot of effort. I also find that the real-time feedback that I get when I'm using unit tests is very, very helpful because I don't have to launch my entire application, navigate to whatever thing I'm trying to do, wait for the build every time just to test a little code change every time. I can just look at my unit test feedback, which I always have live in my console while I'm coding. I just look over there and see if the tests are passing after I hit save. And that happens in a matter of less than a second. So I hit save, less than a second later, I see my test results. And I know that everything's working the way that I want it to. So that real-time feedback, the dramatic savings in maintenance costs have made a really huge impact on the projects that I've used it on.
So there's a lot to unpack there. Let's start with a recent episode I did with Jeremy Clark, and it was about convincing your boss that unit testing is worth the extra time. So first of all, do you find that writing tests or doing TDD takes extra time? And if so, how have you convinced teams or convinced bosses that it was worth the effort?
Studies show that it does take extra time, 15 to 30% more in upfront development costs. However, I suspect that a lot of that cost is associated with the ramp-up time of learning how to use tests well and learning how to write more testable code. When you start doing TDD, especially with unit tests, what you'll find is that the way that you have been programming up to this point is not very testable. So you'll have a lot of mocks and a lot of weird stuff that you're doing just for the sake of unit tests. And that is a headache. But over time, you learn to structure your applications with a lot more pure functions, which, you know, just take some input and then always return the same output. And when you have functions like that and they have no side effects, right? They won't hit the network or hit your database or whatever. And when you structure all the logic that you can with pure functions using pure functions, then writing tests for that stuff is trivially easy and much faster than the process of writing some code, waiting for everything to build, going into the browser, checking to make sure everything works, and you know, manually clicking around and testing. Just that feedback process, the real-time feedback process from the unit tests, can actually help boost your productivity. So a lot of it is ramp up time and learning a new programming paradigm.
So you think doing it on subsequent projects won't have as much ramp up time and therefore you'll be just as fast, if not faster?
Yes. I think that eventually you can get good enough at unit testing and at building applications that are unit testable. You can get good enough at doing that it'll actually speed up your production time instead of slow you down. But I think that process is a learning process that takes time. And I think that people are finding that that is true more and more as functional programming permeates deeper and deeper into our work lives. It used to be that functional programming, which is just programming using pure functions, there's a lot of other stuff associated with it, but it's really using pure functions as the basic building block. When you're doing that, unit tests are trivially easy to build, and they give you real-time feedback that's faster than manually clicking around in your app to test things. I think as teams adopt more functional programming stuff into their workflows, unit tests start to make a lot more sense and become a lot easier, and then eventually become just part of your ingrained daily workflow, and they become like muscle memory. When it hits that point, they become productivity enhancers.
Have you found that it's still difficult to convince teams who are not doing test-driven development? I mean, you've cited a lot of studies and things like that, but what are some other ways that you can try to get some quick wins to show the benefits of TDD?
First of all, I tell them the numbers. I show them what is happening on real teams who have embraced TDD and how that compares to teams that have not embraced TDD, and look at their actual productivity numbers. And that tells a very convincing story to management. It can literally take 30% more development effort to maintain a project that does not use TDD. And when you're talking about developer salaries, that adds up to a lot of money. And the additional 40 to 80% more bugs in production also has a serious impact on product quality, which has a serious impact on your ability for your app to spread virally. So it affects your marketing, it affects your product quality, it affects your customer support costs. So there's all these costs on top of these bugs, like cost of just maintaining the code and fixing the bugs. The real cost is out there in your product performance and your business KPIs. And when you share that information with managers, they very quickly get on board. When you show the actual empirical studies and how it really affects the performance of not just your app, but your business bottom line, your money in the bank, that gets the higher ups on board. When you share the benefits of the real-time developer feedback in your developer console and getting that instant gratification when you change code and you just look and see your test passing and everything's green and you're happy, that sells the developers, that real-time developer feedback.
There's been some studies recently with my employer that show that, especially in web-facing companies, that a customer experience is important is in terms of competition. And that if you don't provide a good customer experience when you have bugs in production, for instance, that they're more likely to switch to competitors. And that's very difficult to measure the actual effects of that. But it does logically make sense. It just sort of empirically makes sense. If I have bad experience, there's a competitor out there that doesn't have a bad experience, I'm more likely to switch to that competitor.
So you say it's very difficult to measure, but one way to measure it is you work on your project for a while, you do a couple of sprints, you build up a bunch of features, and then you look at how your app is actually performing, and then you have a bug burn down sprint. And what that means is you just concentrate, you just do a big sprint where all you do is fix bugs and enhance the performance of the application and improve the product quality. You don't add new features. You have a feature freeze and you just burn down bugs. And then what you do is you release the software, keep going about your merry way building new features, don't release those new features yet, collect some data for a few months, and then make sure that you're measuring time, like if your business is seasonal, for instance, make sure you're measuring comparable time spans and then look at your business KPIs. Are your customers happier? Do you have more support requests or fewer support requests? Are you converting better? Is your product becoming more viral? So you can look at things like your viral factor, the K factor, other business KPIs, and actually compare the numbers. You can measure this stuff. It's not some immeasurable weird thing in the void. It's measurable, and you can create measurable results. There's a whole book on the topic of the economic effects of software quality, and I can get a link for you and share it with you. But it's a huge book that talks about how software quality impacts your business KPIs.
Great. I will put a link to that in the show notes at crosscuttingconcerns.com. You mentioned a term, bug density. I haven't heard before. Can you explain what that means?
Bug density is how many bugs are you aware of in your production API. And bug density has kind of a weird amalgamous meaning depending on how you measure it. One thing that some people like to do is they measure it compared to the total lines of code in their project. So how many bugs per line of code is there? So one thing that I like to do is like, how many bugs per pull request or something like that. And you can look at the bug density by just keeping track. When a bug is reported, just add it to your issue tracker, mark it as a bug, tag it bug, and then you can count those. You can count how many bugs are reported in your app. And if it's not getting reported, then it's nobody cares, so you can kind of say, oh, well, that bug probably doesn't matter then. But the ones that are getting reported, you can count those. You can categorize them and count them, and then compare them to some other measure to figure out density, bugs per something.
So if a bug falls in a forest, does it make a sound, that sort of thing?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Is it ever okay not to write unit tests?
Yes. Unit tests serve a particular purpose. The real-time developer feedback and actually testing the low-level components that come together to form your application. And then there's integration tests, which also play a critical role in your application. And an integration test doesn't test the individual pieces. It tests the application as the components are integrated together. There's a special type of integration test called a functional test. And what that does is test your application end-to-end from the perspective of the user. So it's going to actually simulate clicks in the UI and hit a real database on the back end and retrieve that data and display some new stuff in the UI. So you're testing that entire flow with functional tests. So there are some things that functional tests are just better at than unit tests, and that is to see how the pieces fit together when you're actually hooked up to a real data and a real user UI. So anything involving side effects like saving to the disk or hitting the network, stuff like that, it's better to test those with integration tests or functional tests. The way that you can do that well is you have to keep those things isolated from each other. Your side effects are in their own little neighborhood, right? Separate from your logic that is just pure transformations on data. So you can test your pure transformations using unit tests and test your side effects using functional tests or integration tests.
What you're saying is that every bit of code you're writing must have some sort of test around it.
Should. Yeah, should. Because higher code coverage. Code coverage refers to, is there a test covering this piece of functionality? And you can actually see covered by a test by doing a coverage report. So a higher code coverage correlates with lower bug density. The more test coverage you have, the lower the bug density is going to be. Definitely want to get as much covered as possible. But I also think don't break your neck trying to write a unit test for everything. Instead, like if something is hard to unit test, that's a code smell that either it's too tightly coupled or you're trying to use a unit test when you should be trying to use a functional test. So don't try to cover every single thing with unit tests because that's just silly. Some things just don't make sense in isolation and they exist for the purpose of integration or displaying stuff to the user or something like that. And for that, functional tests are really where it's at.
Do I need to do test-first, test-driven development, or is it okay that I can write tests some other point, maybe test after or test during or something like that? Is the test first really crucial?
Yeah, these things have been measured thoroughly by lots of teams. All these things that measure test first versus test after, while they may not correlate test first directly with lower bug density, what does correlate is higher code coverage. And test first, writing the test before you write the implementation, leads to higher code coverage. So it has a causal effect with higher code coverage, not just a correlation. I think that is because people who are writing tests after, they'll write some a lot of stuff and then they'll forget all the implementation details of stuff that they maybe should be writing tests for. So they'll leave tests out. And that leads to lower test coverage. And like we already mentioned, higher test coverage leads to fewer bugs in production. So lower test coverage leads to more bugs in production. So test first definitely makes a difference, and it's a big difference. It's not a little correlation. It's a big difference.
What sort of coverage should I be trying to achieve? 100%?
100% for 100% sake is sometimes crazy. These things have diminishing returns. Once you hit 80, 90%, going for that extra 1 or 2%, can have high costs with few returns. Keep it above 80. Aim for 90 if you can. Don't aim for 100 just for the sake of hitting the number, because your returns are not going to reward you. Once you get past 90, the returns get much smaller.
One other thing I wanted to ask, you mentioned kind of early on your console that shows you almost instantly test results. Could you just talk a little bit about what sort of tooling and languages you're coding in?
My specialty is JavaScript. I use a library, a testing framework called Tape, which is just the simple, pure thing that you import, and you can test pure functions with pure functions, and it's, well, almost pure. The test runner itself isn't pure, but the testing stuff that you do, so when you write your expectations, and when you write a unit test, you're comparing, trying to answer a few questions, like, what are you testing? What aspect of that thing are you testing? What was the expected output? What was the actual output? And how do you reproduce it when the test failed? And that last one is implicitly answered by your actual output, the creation of the actual output. So I use a really simple test runner called Tape. It just fits naturally into the flow because it's just a standard Unix utility, and you can just point it at a test file and it just imports. It doesn't do a whole bunch of weird mocking and wrapping and running browsers and stuff like that. You can bundle the output of Tape into a file that you can load in a browser and test your inside your browsers if you want to. So I use Tape for unit tests. I've used a bunch of different stuff like Zool and Nightwatch and stuff like that for functional tests. I'm still looking for a better solution for functional tests because the stuff that actually has to drive the browser right now is mostly relying on some Java thing called Selenium, and the Java pieces are a pain in the butt and it doesn't always work well, and there's a bunch of weird stuff you have to deal with. And I also use a browser testing framework in the cloud called Sauce Labs, and that lets you test on lots and lots of different browsers. And I don't use fancy tools like Jest because they're too heavy. And I don't use Ava because it's node only. You can't test the code in browsers. If I'm writing something for browsers, I want to see my unit tests run in the browser and make sure they still pass in the browser, which means like if a browser implementation has a bug in something that you're polyfilling or that you need to polyfill, you're going to catch it that way. You won't catch that if you're just testing in Node.
Are there any resources you'd recommend for someone trying to learn more about test-driven development?
So I've written a few articles on the topic. One is called The Outrageous Costs of Skipping TDD and Code Review, and that's a really good way to get the boss on board if there's any kind of political struggle about it, or get team buy-in. If any of the teams like, oh, I hate unit tests, show them that article. There's another one called 5 Questions Every Unit Test Must Answer, which I just went over briefly, but it talks about how a failing unit test should be a good bug report. It should give you a really good indication of where to look. There's another one called TDD the Right Way. That's RITE. And that stands for unit tests should be readable, isolated for unit tests, integrated for functional tests. The I has a double meaning. T is for thorough and E is for explicit, and explains all that stuff in a lot more detail.
And before we go, is there anything you'd like to promote?
Teams that really want to enhance their productivity through mentorship and learning, check out devanywhere.io. And we've had tremendous success with it. It just launched, and I think that it's a really great thing. It's a one-on-one mentorship online. We meet with video chat and really, really great mentors pairing with you live. And then we also have a thing called Dev Anywhere Live where I teach JavaScript live like 4 days a week and share lessons and stuff like that. So it's really cool. Really great way to ramp up to advanced JavaScript skills really fast.
My guest today has been Eric Elliott. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
This has been the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast, produced and recorded by Matt Rose 2017. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you downloaded this podcast. For show notes, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com. This episode is recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. Hosting for this podcast was made possible in part by Microsoft. It was recorded and mixed with the help of Audacity, Skype, and Camtasia Recorder. The theme music is by The Dirty Truckers. You can buy the music on Amazon or iTunes. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on a future episode, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com to submit your name and idea.